Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Thank you for joining us on Feed the Crew. If you haven't already, please subscribe and follow us on Facebook or Instagram. If you have any feedback, if you'd like to be a guest or suggest a topic, go to our website, feedthecrewpodcast.com. If you love the show and want to support us, you can do that at buymeacoffee.com/feedthecrew. Hey, everybody, welcome to Feed the Crew. Today we have hair, wig, and makeup artists Stacy Lee, Allison Forsyth, Ray Sanchez, and my guest host, Madeline Archer, is with us today. We're here to talk about their careers and the industry. And I wanted to thank you all for being with us today. I want to thank you all for being here with us. I'm going to have you go around and introduce yourselves and tell us who you are, where you're from, and a little bit about what you do. Let's start with Ray.
So I'm from Houston. I work at the Houston Grand Opera. I occasionally do wigs and makeup for the Hobby Center, the Broadway Across America shows as well.
Very nice. Cool. And Allison?
Yeah. Hi, my name's Allison, and I also am from Houston. And Ray and I have worked together for several years now. I've been with Houston Grand Opera for, I've completed 5 years, so I guess this would be, you know, my sixth year with HGO. And I primarily work with wigs and makeup, some hairstyling as well. I kind of started in costume design and working with costumes and then kind of found my way to hair and makeup. So I guess that's the main thing I would say I do.
Well, that's really cool that you made a transition from costuming over to wigs, hair, and makeup. So I want to ask you more about that at some point for sure. Did we get Stacy back at all?
No, she's texting me right now.
Okay. Think she's coming in?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then let's hang on real tough. See if we can get Stacy in here. And
get her intro.
Yeah. I met Stacy on.
Hey, there she is.
Oh, there she is.
I'm going to be trouble. I'm so bad with technology. Like,
that's okay. So, Stacy, why don't you? We just went around and introduced ourselves. So, you tell us who you are, where you're from, and a little bit about what you do.
My name is Stacy Lee. I'm originally from Baltimore, so essentially the DMV area. Our states are like this small compared to, you know, big old country of Texas. So we actually met working in DC, which is very common to jump around from Maryland to DC, Virginia. But I do hair and makeup. I started off doing makeup, got my license with that. And then I got my license with hair, and I work behind the chair, and I still do some commercial stuff and theater here and there. Non-union.
Hey, that's important.
Mm-hmm. In Baltimore, yeah. There's so much commercial work. So non-union is kind of the way to go for the area.
It absolutely is. It's so right to work over there that even our union works non-union jobs just to survive, because that's just the way it is.
Even though that's not supposed to happen.
Right. And it's so nobody talks about it, but it's absolutely true, right? That the union works non-union jobs. It just happens.
Yeah. Even actors, they're like, don't tell anyone I was here.
Right. Yeah. You didn't see me. Give me my check and I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe let's take turns, like talking about how you guys got like interested in hair and makeup, like whether you do more hair or more makeup, you know, how you got into the industry, because we all know it's kind of hard to get into sometimes. So I don't know, let's go alphabetical. We'll start with Allison.
Okay. Well, so I guess I've, you know, growing up and everything, I just always was interested in theater. You know, I did community theater. I was also really interested in art. I was always in art class and things. So eventually I decided to get my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in theater design and technology. And my emphasis was in costume design. And I also, you know, focused a little on hair and makeup at that point, but then it was mostly focused on costume design. Dabbled in the other areas with scenic design, a little bit with lighting, but primarily it was costume, wig and makeup. And so got my BFA and, you know, picked up some work here and there. I did some things with a couple of little things with Rice University, and mostly I'd say my first, you know, professional, you know, kind of big professional job was with Houston Grand Opera. So I started on the wig crew. I guess it was back in 2015. Yeah, it was October 2015, I think is when I started with them on the wig crew, and did that for about 3 years. And then I became the wig shop assistant. So for about 2 years, I was the wig shop assistant. So that kind of brings us to present day.
That's pretty cool. And I guess we'll dive into later about what the wig shop like really does and what it means to be the wig shop assistant. So, but we'll get into that after maybe everybody else sort of gives us this little background. So let's see, alphabetical, that means right. Ray is next.
So I actually got into makeup when I was like 12 years old. And I just turned, so I've been doing it for 21 years now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So when I was 12 years old, there was a modeling company in Houston. I don't even remember what they were called. I don't even remember if they're around anymore, but, they were offering a workshop to learn professional makeup for print and runway, like fashion makeup. And so I took that and I learned a lot of techniques and tips and tricks from like industry professionals that were working. This was like right around 2000, 2001, 2002. And then fell in love with it. From there, I did theater through the rest of middle school, got into high school, was still doing theater, but we had a segment on stage makeup, and I got really, really into that. So I started doing stage makeup for most of my school's big productions. And then in the summers, I would design makeup for community theater. The first show I designed, I was 16. It was a youth production of The Jungle Book.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and then I designed a couple here and there. Went to college, got a Bachelor of Arts in theater with, and most of my emphasis courses were makeup design, wig design. I graduated from SFA with that. And then the only places I could really get work were with up and coming indie filmmakers. And so that was my first experience on film sets. And so that was really where I got into the industry. I was working in Houston, San Antonio, and Austin. And I would travel between all three of those cities in a single week. Wow. Doing projects with all these different crews and directors and everything. Built up my resume that way. I met a 48-hour film group that I've been with a couple of years now. One of my first shows with them, I got nominated for best makeup at the film, at the film competition, runner up.
Still impressive.
Yeah. And then I submitted my resume to the Houston Grand Opera, And my first show with them was Aida in the 2013-14 season. I've been with them ever since. A couple years after that, I managed to get on the list for IATSE 896 in Houston as an overhire. And so that was how I would get jobs at Broadway Across America shows when they would come to Houston. And one of the coolest things I ever did, I had two full circle shows in a single season. When I was in high school, one of the shows that really made me like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, was the Phantom of the Opera movie that came out. Mm. And when the Wicked tour came to Houston that year as well. And it was like, one day at the Wicked show, it was at the Hobby Center. I said, one day I'm going to work this show on this stage. And I did that a couple years ago. I did that in like 2016.
That's awesome.
You go,
so cool. Yay, applause.
Yeah.
And that was the summer of 2016, and the Thanksgiving of 2015, I worked the Phantom of the Opera when it came here as well.
Oh, that's so awesome.
I remember admiring your Wicked apron, your cute little Wicked apron that you would wear on Wig Crew. I'm like, oh, it's like your badge of honor.
Yes.
And totally. I always say that the hat that I got on Wicked and the apron I got on Wicked were the most expensive things I have ever bought. Because while they only cost me a total of like maybe $20 backstage, it cost me 10 years and a degree to get there.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh man, that's cool.
That is really awesome. It's always great to learn so much like about your guys' backgrounds and stuff. Like even when you think you know somebody, you're like, wait, I didn't know you did that. Like I never would have guessed that you started so young. That's crazy.
I did. I really did.
And around here, traveling from Houston to San Antonio is like, you know, DC to New York City. It's huge. It's a long drive.
That's about 3 hours. I'd say it's about three and a half hours from Houston to San Antonio.
Three to four. So that's literally Baltimore.
It's Baltimore to New York. Absolutely.
Wow.
So, Stacey, now that it's, your turn alphabetically, tell us a bit about your background.
Oh, gosh. This is really fun, like, hearing everyone's background because, like, I don't know, like, the passion definitely comes from when we were younger. Like, I remember going to community theater when I was a kid and seeing the Nutcracker at the Kennedy Center. And then when you get to work, like, when I got to work at the Kennedy Center, like, being on stage backstage, it kind of makes you a little emotional, you know? You're like,
oh, yeah.
It reminds you of when you were a kid and like all those, emotions and the amazement you just felt. And you're like, cool, now I get to be a part of this. And there's probably a kid out in the audience right now that's feeling the same way that I felt, you know?
Exactly. So, I never thought about that. You're right.
Yeah.
Just, you know, using art to inspire people, especially in a time like 2020, it's just so needed. Sorry. Back on track, but I started when I was 13. I got into acting, so I did like different acting classes and just like little community theater things here and there. Tried to meet up with agents, did headshots, and I was such a shy kid. I mean, I'm still a shy person, but you just learn in the industry to just deal with it. So I started getting into theater in my community college. I just did that as a minor. I did business as my major, and I never thought I was going to do it more than that. I just saw, art as a fun side job because that's what people tell you it is, right? They still tell us that it's not a real career. Don't listen to that because people make a lot of money.
That's so true.
So I tried my hand in everything. My dad was an electrician, so I was interested in lighting. I loved building things, so set design was fun. My aunt used to do costume design, so she taught me how to sew. I didn't know where I wanted to go. I didn't know where I fit in. I just wanted to kind of try everything. I was a tomboy. I wasn't into makeup or hair. I did a lot of face painting when I was 13 years old, a lot of special effects stuff. I went and got my makeup license just because it felt like something to do that was artistic. It was a part of theater I haven't experienced yet. I saw people backstage doing hair and makeup and I was like, hey, that, I haven't tried that yet. So I got my makeup license back when you needed one. You don't need one anymore.
Oh, interesting.
They took that away in Maryland in 2009. So that's what eventually led me to get my hair license, because I felt like, you know, I needed to expand on the portfolio. But my teacher there used to do, she used to judge like the body painting competitions that happen worldwide. People make a lot of money with that if you were to win it. You know, they just do it for fun. But she told me, she inspired me to go out to California. So I did some special effects training out there at the Westmore Academy. I had like Marilyn Monroe's makeup artist in there with us. My main teacher was the guy that did it, the makeup for the Planet of the Apes, the original. So it was just interesting, like meeting all these people and learning from them. You know, I went to a lot of classes, as many classes as I could go. You know, if there was something happening in New York, whether it be through a company like Makeup Forever or MAC down in Florida, I jump on a plane and I just go, you know. Just when there was like a fashion show in Philly, you know, I would just go and do it. I would say, how can I be a part of this? And yeah.
That's really awesome. And it's great to hear that that you found your passion for it maybe a little bit later, because of course Allison and Ray both found it so early that it's,
yeah,
like for a lot of people that's intimidating, being like, oh, I had to start when I was 12. But like you and I, we both found our passion for it a little bit later, and that's, yeah, still okay.
Yep.
I think her passion was there and she didn't know it.
I think that happens. I've talked about, like, I was never into clothes, like, as a kid and stuff. I was a total tomboy. But thinking back now, I'm like, oh, right. I was in middle school and I like altered this bright red pair of jeans to be these gigantic bell bottoms. And they were my favorite pair of pants. Like, I was actually into it a lot earlier than I realized. It just wasn't sort of crystallized.
And the thing about it is, you know, the older you get, you know, the more you can learn and grow and expand upon it. Like, you know, Stacey was talking about the, you know, the licensing and everything. Like right now I'm currently working on getting my esthetician license so I can start doing facials and focus more on skincare, which, you know, very much ties into makeup as well. So, you know, just kind of adding to it and compounding on it. And, you know, there's just a lot of different directions you can go with it. So.
And I think one of the things you always know when you've found the calling, because it never gets old and you never want to stop learning. You know, like,
yeah,
I've been doing it for what, 21 years now, and there is still stuff for me to learn. I just signed up this year for the Stan Winston online courses, and there's a course on there that I want to take, makeup design for fight sequences, sequence design for fight scenes for makeup. Cool.
That's a thing I would never think even existed. Like,
so one of the reasons why I actually jumped on that specific class is because one of the things that I started out with was gore makeup and fight makeup.
Mm-hmm. And she's very good at it, and it grosses me out.
I've made a couple people. A couple people have been sick looking at my work. Yes, I've made people sick. I've gotten people in trouble. Yes, that's fun.
Oh, no.
One kid almost got arrested. That was pretty funny.
Oh my God.
That's great. One time I was doing a gore makeup, there was a slit throat. And I had done it like I had really gotten in there and done the details. And the photographer on set was like, "Ooh, this is amazing. I'm going to get a close-up shot." He got in there, took a close-up shot, put his camera down and ran to the bathroom. That was like, that was one of like, that's my, oh my proudest God. Moment on set.
So gross.
Yeah, that's precisely why I got out of special effects and went into fashion. I couldn't handle it. I was
at one point,
I'm a wuss.
Oh, this was cool. At one point, I was doing a serial killer's web series, and they had the killer cut off a girl's finger. And like, they had given me the fake finger that someone else, they had brought for me. And I filled it with blood in such a way that when he picked it up and squeezed it, the blood seeped out between his fingers just perfectly.
Oh, you're sick in the best way possible.
And I'm just like, I'm looking at this totally from agree. Off set totally and I'm agree. Just like, this is art.
Oh, awesome. Man. I love it.
And yeah, well, Ray also, some of Ray's other hobbies include, you know, magical unicorns and tea parties as well. So like, you know, she's just a wonderful, wonderful person.
If the unicorns happen to have a shiv taped to their horn, that's no one's business but the unicorns.
I was going to say, she's available for parties, right?
Not okay, kids' parties.
I did a block party one time. Just like, I wasn't, it was when I was early on in my career, I wasn't really working a lot of big gigs. And a family had asked me if I would do painting with my makeup at their block party. And kids, they wanted cute stuff and they wanted fun stuff and they wanted happy stuff. And that was fun. And then this like 13-year-old girl comes up to me and she goes, "Can you draw a demon arm on my a demon eye on my arm?" I was like, yeah, I can. And so like, I put all of this shading on it. Like, it really looked like it was coming out of her arm. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing. I like that kid.
She didn't scare anybody. That's cool.
Oh man.
That is so awesome. I mean, I think that's one of the great things is like, you guys really get to use your talents off stage too. Like, there's all sorts of applications for this stuff. I mean, I know like Stacy, you said you work behind the chair as well. That means you work in a salon for people who don't know. Do any of the rest of you work in a salon at all?
Mm-mm. So once I get my license, as an esthetician, there we go. I need to learn to say it. I'll be able to
start. It's first step. I'm scared.
Yeah, step one. Say esthetician correctly. I'll be able to start doing facials, you know, in a retreat, you know, like a retreat or a salon or a spa. So I'm working towards it. I guess other ways I've used my makeup skills is I've done makeup for weddings before. So yeah, once people hear you know how to do makeup, they're like, "Oh, can you do my makeup? Can you do my makeup?" I'm like, you know,
well, there are differences. Yeah, there are differences though between doing stage makeup, film makeup, and wedding makeup. There's so much that's different about that. And Ray just said, you know, all those great examples of gore. And Stacy gave us some of the other examples of, you know, Planet of the Apes, etc. There's such a big difference between these things that I heard a lot of people who don't understand the industry say that during this pandemic, oh, it should be easy for people like hair and makeup. Well, first of all, even if you could easily transfer a hair person from stage into a salon, that doesn't mean the salons are working. That's one.
Yeah.
Okay. But that Stacy does have that crossover that you had already established at some other point in the timeline of your world. So this wasn't a pandemic crossover for you, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It was just something I did because I knew I didn't want to travel as much. I wanted to kind of have a family and I wanted to be able to be choosier about my jobs. I make good money and I was really busy, but I was on the road all the time and I didn't have any control really of my schedule because I had to say yes. Because if I didn't say yes to a job today, even though I'm crazy busy, for some reason, sometimes you'd have like up to 3 months of nothing. Just, it's crazy how it works that way. It'll be busy, 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 and then nothing. So you have to say yes to jobs when you freelance 24/7 to make sure you're paying the bills if you don't have long-term gigs.
Which is how sometimes you end up on a 2-week Broadway show that's, or a 2-month Broadway show that's absolutely insane.
Yeah, yeah, four hours of sleep, if your anxiety lets you have that.
Oh God, I feel that.
And that's when you are, of course, commuting every day between Baltimore and DC.
In the snow. What Stacey is saying,
it's very cold.
It's just so industry. Like it's everyone in the industry has that. Like for me, my 2015-2016 season, I work a day job in an engineering industry. So yeah. I work a 9-to-5 and then I go after work downtown to the theater district and I work a show. And in the 2015-16 season, I was never not working a show. And so I would wake up in the morning at 7, I would go into work by 8, I would be done by 4, drive downtown, and then do a show for 4 or 5 hours. I wouldn't get out until 11 or noon, drive an hour back home, sleep, mm-hmm. and do it all over again. And I did that for an entire year.
Yeah.
Yeah, this industry can definitely be pretty rough on you. It is definitely not for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
You definitely have to love it because it's no surprise people are where they are, you know. The people might not even be the best at their craft, some of these like celebrity hairstylists, but you know, they're okay with jumping on a plane to London 1 week and coming back to LA, and you know, they hustle. They definitely work for it. It doesn't fall in your lap, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that corporate scene, you have folks that you don't ever hear about them really, unless they stop doing what they're doing and start teaching. But you have people that follow people around the world. So let's just take a Hillary Clinton, right?
Yeah.
People follow her. They get on the plane with her and they're doing her hair and makeup on the plane. And she touch her up when she gets to place A and touch her up again at place B. So that is their life, to pack their bag, be able to follow that person around and touch them up and make them look good wherever they're at. Yeah. Kind of a whole separate industry though. From
the thing, like I just the other day, I had earlier this year, I had a girl that I had gone to high school with who she had found out like everything that I had listed out here today, and she wanted to know how I had done it, but she already had a family. She had 3 small kids, you know, and like in order to get to where we've gotten in this industry, what they don't tell you, you miss birthdays, you miss holidays, you miss anniversaries, you miss, like, you know, like I missed all of those things for years in order to get that 2015-2016 season. And it changed my career and it set me up. But after that, I met my boyfriend. I had missed so much of my family's lives. I'd missed so much of my nieces and my nephews' lives. And I realized, I updated my resume. And I was like, I don't have to do this anymore. I can have a life. I can be with my family. You know, and so I settled down. I started being pickier about the jobs that I choose. And that's something you that's a goal, but you have to give up everything at first to get there.
I appreciate you saying that so much, because that job I worked with, in DC, I missed out on being a bridesmaid in my cousin's wedding, and I had to like apologize to her 1,000 times. And then right down the street, what is that show called I want to say How I Met Your Mother, but it wasn't that. Oh, This Is Us. This Is Us was going on down the street, and they asked me to be a makeup artist on that show. And I had, I think it was when the vice president was coming to watch the theatrical production. And I was the head of hair and makeup. And I was like, I just have like a moral compass. I'm like, who am I to leave for another gig that I really wanted to do? But if you're the lead, you kind of even have to like give up other jobs sometimes mm-hmm. that you want to do, because who's going to want to hire you back if you're just gonna, you know, flake on them?
Yeah, actually that same show for me, I had some other opportunities that I was like debating at the same time. And I was like, if I take this 2-month job, that's like what I really want to do, I'm going to have to say no to these other opportunities and I'm never going to get them again. So it was definitely a debate for me to be able to take that. And obviously it worked out for me and I'm glad that it did. It was really sort of the turning point in my life and career in some ways. Like we all sort of had that show or that season where it's like, this is sort of a point where you're like, okay, I've kind of gotten there. But yeah, I mean, that's definitely something people don't think about, is having to think about the trade-off of even between shows and between opportunities, like what's going to be the best for your career. Hmm.
So, and Stacey mentioned, since we're talking about the same show, the three of us were on the same show together. But Stacey mentioned that 3 months off, right? So as a freelancer, I got used to the season, how things worked. And you store things up like a squirrel. You keep save your money, because you're going to have 3 months off where you're not getting paid. So after my 20 some years in the industry, I get to that show. That was supposed to be my 2 months off, because I always had December and January off. And they asked me to stay because things weren't going well and they needed somebody to keep it organized and together. So I gave up my time off, which, as I realized after that show, I also relied on that for my sanity. So yeah. as the young freelancer, I advise you to get in the habit of saving your money, knowing when that downtime is going to happen. And then you, of course, use those savings to get you through those couple months off that you'll have. Because for me, it was always December, January, and then July, August, because I didn't want to work the hot outdoor festivals either. So that was, and my kids were out of school. So that was my downtime, were those 4 months out of the year. I don't know how it works completely with the schedule of theater, because I didn't spend enough time in theater, at least.
Theater also works over the holidays because there's Christmas shows and stuff. So that's kind of the only main difference.
Yeah, that's true. I did theater for a couple of years when my kids were small as a sound designer, because I was in audio, but it's not the same as all theaters, you know, in Philadelphia. And I don't remember what that was. My kids are in their 20s now.
Well, that show that we worked on together was a mess because somebody broke two of the cardinal rules on stage that they shouldn't have. Do you remember that?
No, I mean, I'm sure I'll remember when you say, but I'm forgetting what it is.
And I forgot Jake was there as well. So we have our technical producer over here, who's Jake. And Jake was on that show. He was one of the riggers and was actually a fly rail rigger on stage in costume.
The director came in from New York and he said the things you shouldn't say on stage, the Shakespeare that's gonna.
Yes.
I knew it. As soon as you said, he said what you shouldn't say. I knew exactly what he said, and I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to like hint at.
I got you now.
Yeah,
I got you now. I didn't know that happened.
Uh-uh. Oh, yeah, he did two things. That and it was something else. The chair, the light,
You know, we never had a ghost light either. So... Not sure why we didn't have one, but we didn't. Well, I mean, it was a very, very not normal event. So
yeah, our wardrobe was in a piano storage room.
We basically did a Broadway event in a venue that's not supposed to be a Broadway stage. That's what happened.
If you want to hear more about it, my interview was up and we talked all about it.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a bit of a nightmare in so many ways. It definitely had all the things that you could have go wrong and still survive a show. They went wrong. They
just did. Yeah.
Just so surprising how much we do overcome, especially, I mean, in my experience with live theater, so much can go wrong and does go wrong, and yet we somehow always manage to get through it and make it happen. It's kind of unbelievable sometimes, and it's really good to, you know, listen to you guys and your stories, and it's like, wow, there are people out there that really understand, because a lot of times, you know, whenever I will, you know, tell, you know, non-theater folk about, you know, oh yes, you know, I work with Houston Grand Opera and stuff, the almost always the reaction is, oh, that's fun, and I'm like, well,
that's so glamorous.
It is, like, they're like, you know, they're like, oh, that's fun, or that sounds so cool, it sounds so fun. I'm like, well, it is, and I love it, and it is fun, but it's really hard work. It's really late nights, long hours, giving up on, you know, personal life, family, events. I mean, all kind of live theater is like that, you know. And like, I don't think a lot of people really understand that unless you live it, like unless you work in the industry and you live it, you know, or very close to someone who does, like a lot of people don't understand like how much work it really, you know, takes to, you know, make a show happen and pull it off.
Yeah.
It's fun
go ahead. It's fine.
No, I was just going to say, it's fun to watch people date people that aren't in the industry. Like one person is, one person isn't. Cause you know, at first they think it's, you know, cool and cute. They're like, oh, you do this, you work on film sets. And then when it gets to, what do you mean you can't be at the family vacation? It's not so cute anymore.
Yep.
Yeah. Or we just had one of our interviews was talking about everybody thinks it's so glamorous for us to travel. Like when you said you went through to San Antonio and Austin, and we think of that as being so cool. And I'm sure that when you look back on the memories, it was good learning and cool stuff that you did. But in the moment of it, you're driving 3 hours just to do your job, right?
Oh, I mean, you get flown to Hawaii, but then you don't get to sleep. You have to get up and work at 4:00. And you don't get an extra day, and you have to fly right back home. You're like, I didn't even see anything but the hotel.
And that's what it is. Like, we do get to do, we get to go to all these amazing places, and we get to like see all of these amazing things because the sets are amazing, the locations are amazing. We never get to leave the set. We don't get time to go out and explore and experience and have fun. We're there to work. We go on set, we work, we go to the hotel, we go back, and then we leave.
Yep.
Yeah.
My first international trip, I literally flew over, was in London for 24 hours, and flew back with the same flight crew that flew us there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We're like, wait a minute, we just flew this whole group. I'm like, yep, and we're all going home, and none of us have slept. So can we have all these middle seats? You know, where can we lay out and stretch out?
You know, that's one of my favorite things about being in theater, especially as long as I've been in theater. Like when the whole crew together, the cast and crew will hit that point of delirious sleep deprivation at the same time. And all of a sudden, everyone is having the greatest cold McDonald's that's been sitting out for 4 hours, still hasn't gone bad. It's the greatest meal any of us have ever had. We won it for Thanksgiving, and everything is funny.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, and everything's funny, so...
we got to a point on that
stage.
We got to a point on that event where the things that were happening around us just became amusing to me because I was the technical director. And I'm working late one night with a lighting issue, and I'm walking on and off stage, helping them out that way, but also doing some of my own work. I'm walking on and off stage. So I'm on stage, you know, show my hands for lights, focus here, et cetera. And I walk off stage and there's a huge flood over top of all of our camlock that's rolling down the hallway. There's a fountain on the floor above us that has sprung a leak and is now draining 50,000 gallons of water into the theater, or theater space, technically.
You mean that smart building that was millions of dollars?
Yes, this million-dollar building is leaking water onto our cam lock. Two sets with distro. So we have, all I could do is like laugh about it. Now I'm on, you know, trying to call whoever's supposed to like get the water turned off, get buckets up here, get it off of our electricity, bring some mops. I can't even be mad anymore. This is like, everything's too crazy.
I didn't even know that happened, by the way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Right outside the hallway, right outside the, between the stage and wardrobe, and on top of all the electricity, we had two runs of feeder cable running through there.
And that must've been before Stacy and I came in on that show.
That's possible. Was that still there before tech? Yeah. Jake's saying it's before tech. So it was before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cause I would have remembered a bunch of costumes being ruined by a flood.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, 18th century costumes.
Gosh, not a couple $1 million worth.
And not quite so amusing. I'm sure it was not amusing at the time, but it's not so funny story having to do with water and flooding. Ray and I definitely, along with the rest of Houston Grand Opera, survived Hurricane Harvey, in which the entirety of the Wortham basement, which where the costume shop, the wig shop, everything filled up with water. Water even got onto the first floor and onto the stage of the main stage of the Brown Theater. It was horrible and devastating. Mm-hmm. And the Wortham was out of commission for a year. We did an entire season in a makeshift built theater in the George R. Brown Convention Center. We built, you know, the Resilience Theater, which was great. A lot of the other theaters in this theater district around Houston, you know, they had to travel from, like, you know, the ballet, I think, was in, you know, the Hobby Center for 2 weeks, and then they went across town to Sugar Land and performed there for a while and stuff. So we were able to stay in the same place, but I mean, it's a convention center, so like they had to build something that would work, you know, remotely, you know, acoustically and everything. It was just, we were so happy to get back in the Wortham over a year later. But yeah, everything, gosh, all the wigs, you know, my supervisor's entire career, 37 year career of making hand ventilated wigs, everything was lost.
Wigs are expensive.
Wow. Yeah. We lost about $2 million, I guess, $2 million in wigs and makeup. And the costume shop had moved a lot of their stuff to higher floors, so they still lost a lot in the patterns, the hand-drawn, you know, patterns, everything.
And a lot of shoes, I think they lost
shoes,
too.
Yeah, a lot of like shoes, yeah. Accessory type things. Yeah, it was kind of a nightmare. I had to kind of restart everything. But
and that season that season before, our wig supervisor that she was just talking about had bought everyone on the crew personalized Houston Grand Opera full front aprons.
Yeah,
for when we worked shows. And most all of us had kept them on site in our kit. And all of them were lost. I had been bringing mine in and out, and I think I was the only one that still had it.
Yeah, I think
yours were lost.
Yours were, yeah, mine drowned. Mine drowned in the flood. But I think you had yours at home, right?
Did.
Yeah. It was just, you know, just countless. I mean, all the makeup, all the wigs, just everything was, it was very devastating. But
yeah, it was.
I mean, they named the theater in the George R. Brown the Resilience Theater because even though such a devastating thing happened, they were still able to pull together and do a complete season. Nothing was canceled that season, actually. a huge blessing that happened was all the wigs that we had from Chicago Lyric Opera. They had sent us all their wigs for Traviata, styled, huge, over the top, huge wigs. We actually had those on the sixth floor, so those did not get lost.
Oh, good.
Thankfully, yes. I was like, oh, I'm so glad we didn't lose Chicago's wigs. But they were on the sixth floor, so that was our season opener that year in the George R. Brown, what was moved to the George R. Brown, but we were able to do it because we had all the wigs still that were on the sixth floor instead of down in the basement. So glad that we were able to safely pack them away and ship them back to Chicago unharmed. But
that season, Allison, that season, the Houston Grand Opera got nominated in the Opera Awards, didn't we? For one of the top opera companies in the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. HGO made it in the top six of opera companies around the world. And we were only one in North America. So of course that includes, you know, the entire United States, Canada, you know, so we were the only.
That includes the New York Met.
That
is pretty cool. Just saying, right?
Just saying. It was pretty cool. But all the other companies were in, they were European companies. I think there were two on the list. I think there were two from Germany, one from France, one from Italy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just remember we were one of six, and it was we were the only one in North America. But yeah,
that's a huge
stuff that we overcome together, you know.
Well, and I think that's an important thing to note is like there was a freaking hurricane. We lost you lost everything almost. And yet it still didn't shut down the season. So that really goes to show how significant like COVID has been for our industry. Yeah. I mean, this is the first time we've really shut down entirely. I mean, a freaking hurricane, you lose everything and the show still goes on. I mean, what it takes for everything to shut down is just immense.
Well, I think the thing that really is different about COVID is that it takes out the people, it takes out the crew, it keeps us from being together. Like as long as we can pull together, we can make anything happen. Harvey and the flood only took out things, you know, like equipment, things are replaceable, but people are not. So like we have to be able to come together and make things happen. And this has been such a different circumstance because I don't think we've ever been in a situation where we can't like physically come together and just pull something off.
Yeah,
because you even have like what do they do now, like the theater HD, you know, where you can watch it, but they're not even getting together digital. They're not even getting together to do shows to, you know, do that. I mean, Broadway is shut down, they said, to like June 2021 at least.
And you know, like the format that I've noticed on like the live digital shows that are going down is like I don't even remember what this style is called, but like when I was still in high school doing theater, our Christmas show wouldn't be a big production. It would be we're all wearing all black. We have the music stands in front of us and we perform our parts reading the script in front of us.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like one of those like live reading shows where the acting is still there, but there is nothing else. And that's what we've gone back to. I haven't done that since like 2004. And now here we are doing it again.
Yeah, and it kind of kills, even within the industry, it kills some specific parts of the industry more than others as well.
I mean, I'm excited that now we're trying to, you know, start with, you know, doing, you know, some recording, you know, which is now kind of, you know, moving forward a little bit, but of course it's not the same as live, but, you know, trying to, you know, get some of that recording done and, you know, streaming the productions and stuff. I mean, at least it's something, but it's just so hard not to have our live theater, you know.
It is, but at the same time, I mean, as a silver lining to it, I guess, I think it is going to bring in a new audience of people. I think people are more willing to go online and watch something that maybe they wouldn't have been willing to pay for a ticket to come and see. So even though like it's not really benefiting those of us who work in the industry right now necessarily, I think maybe in the long run it will, because it will generate more interest for these shows.
I mean, COVID has definitely done an interesting thing, even though like it is unfortunately killing some small businesses. I think it's bringing more attention to like mental health and taking time for yourself and really just enjoying life, you know, and hopefully that brings people to appreciate the small things, the small community theaters or anything, art, stuff like that.
It is bringing a new heightened awareness to the role the arts play in society and daily life, you know, because like without the arts, you don't have music, you don't have theater, you don't have commercials, you don't have shows, you don't have anything, you don't have books.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that when things come back, because of like we're talking about the higher appreciation and everything else, I think our jobs are going to skyrocket. It's going to come back with a blast once we get through some of the startup things, because like when we had our 2007-2008 recession and things kind of came down a little bit, when it came back and it came back a little bit on the slow side, I think we're going to see that same thing happen, because people are going to be a little cautious. They want to see a couple of people do it ahead of them. You do it first, mm-hmm. and I'll see what happens. Let's see if it works for you. But afterwards, when things really open up, I think it's going to be a huge boom. People are going to want to come back to see the opera. They're going to want to come back to see these shows. It's going to be huge. They're going to want to see a concert. Hell, I want to see a concert, and I haven't seen a concert in 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
I'm being honest about that. As an audio person, it used to drive me crazy to go and I would be critiquing somebody else's work. And so I stopped going to concerts. That's just the honest answer. But I'm going to want to go see a concert. I'm going to want to do this.
See people.
Yeah. I mean, I had concert tickets for this past summer. It's the first time I've ever bought tickets a year in advance for a concert, and it's now pushed to next summer, and I'm just like crossing my fingers, like I really want to see this concert.
I'm kind of hoping for like a bigger boom in indie film, because my career plans for 2020, this was going to be the year that I tried to devote my entire summer to transitioning into makeup design for indie film.
Cool.
Because that was where my heart always was being a makeup designer. And obviously that didn't happen.
But now,
like I have so much time to really dig into these designer courses at Stan Winston. And I have so much time to like consume all of the shows that are streaming now, like the live performances and everything, Broadway HD. Hey, that's an awesome. Yeah. And like there's so much I want to do now that not only is people going to come back and want to go to the theater, artists are going to come back and want to make art.
Exactly. I was going to say, from what I've seen and heard throughout my contacts in the industry, is that those who are writing the independent films went, you know, into their retreat and just continued to write. So they're sitting back creating, just waiting, building up, you know, maybe they're enhancing a single project, or they're now have got five under their belt and they're, you know, going to come out and they're going to have so much to do and keep knocking them out one at a time. It is going to, indie films is going to be fantastic as well. Not to mention that it will put back to work. You're going to have all these eager people that right now are doing a lot of video work, but you know, HG opens their doors and guess what? We don't need the videographers that have been here doing the digital stuff for us. So they're going to get out. They're going to find those independent films. So they're not going to lose any work. They're just going to shift over to do something else. It's going to be huge. Everything's going to come back big.
I mean, Hollywood is so pushed back right now. I mean, California just keeps on shutting down. They had all those wildfires. The salons were shut down. People weren't allowed to film. Things that were supposed to come out in 2020 are now coming out next year. So like Netflix doesn't have as much content. So they're going to be looking for more content. I mean, there is things, you know, in the making to come out in 2021, but still they're gonna be searching, I think, for more content.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's true.
Well, and I think the thing is too, we all have the time to improve our skills right now. I mean, we've probably never had this much time to like really delve into our stuff. So I think the thing is too, because everybody who works in this industry is passionate, as we've said, like you're not going to survive if you're not passionate about what you do, because it's just, it can be grueling. But I think the thing is, we're all going to come back re-energized. We're all going to come back with more knowledge than we had when we left, because we have this time to really dive into everything that we love about our industry.
Powerful. Yeah, this has been a powerful conversation. So let me ask you, ladies, what has changed for you with the pandemic? Like, let's be specific about it. What has happened in your world because of the pandemic? And I see the stunned faces.
Well, okay, so
let's go with, I was gonna say, let's go with Stacey first. It's probably easiest for her.
So I do travel a little bit here and there to do some commercial work, because it's quicker money. You know, you can be on usually no longer than a week gig. It can be a day to a week. So and it's also less people. Like it could be even a commercial with 1 to 2 actors, and you know, I'll just have contact with the actor and that's it. Everyone else, we try to, you know, stay 6 feet apart. You know, but you also have to see like travel restrictions. We tried to do as much outside as possible. So we weren't inside and weren't going against any like restrictions. You know, if you're in a venue or a theater, you have to think about what your capacity is. If you're in a recording studio, what's the capacity? No one's doing big things right now because you can't, you know, hold that capacity. So yeah, it's just kind of like everything's just a little bit slower. People are a little bit more hesitant. At the same time, there were things that people wanted to get done before we got shut down again, just in case we got shut down again. So it's just been the weirdest year. There's nothing, you can't predict anything. People are like, oh, is this your slow season? Or is this, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening around me. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But of course, your year has changed anyway, because, you know, you have a baby now.
I have a baby. Yes.
Oh, what's your baby?
She's 6 months.
Yeah. She had, that's why I was thinking it was easy for her. I'm thinking, you might have wanted to make some changes anyway, or been planning on changes anyway.
Yeah. Well, I kind of have been, like I said before, I was kind of going down the path of being able to pick and choose things. And that's kind of like, I live full time at the beach. So I travel back to my family's place, and thank goodness they're all great. So if I ever needed a babysitter, you know, I'd go to the city, have babysitters there, and then I'd go off and do what I need to do, stay in a hotel somewhere or whatever. But,
yeah, I have a baby.
Ray, what do you think's changed the most for you?
For me, so the last show I did, the last theater I did, the last makeup and hair I did was January's HGO performance. And then all of the theaters that I had submitted a resume to for designing in the summer, those are all gone. And then HGO has canceled the rest of the 2020-21 season that I saw. So no theater next year either. So I'm losing 2 years. And something that I've really noticed is theater. When I got into theater, my first technical director looked me in the eye and he said, listen to me. If you can do anything else, do that.
I think we've heard that before.
And
every day. Okay.
And wow. These, like, losing 2 years of theater, basically losing almost all of 2020 and now losing almost half or more of 2021, I really can't do anything else. And I need theater. I need theater. I need makeup. I need hair. I need art. I need film. And so, like, I never lost my sense of wonder, you know, like walking across the stage before the show when the curtain's up and all the seats are empty, I still get that awe, you know? And like one of my favorite things, like one of the most magical things on every show is when we get to like the last rehearsal right before the first performance, when I'm following my run sheet backstage and everyone else knows exactly what they need to do, exactly when they need to do it, and exactly where they need to be at every moment. And it's like this unspoken, beautiful choreography. And that is always magical. And it has never lost the magic for me. And I always, every show I get, I have a sense of wonder. I get to do this again. And like, it's come back with a vengeance. I can't wait to go back. And I know for a fact, this is my career. This is what I'm going to do. And this, because this is who I am and I need this.
So this strengthened your resolve. That's awesome.
Yes.
It's interesting that you say that because there are a lot of people that have left the industry.
A lot of us didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
And yeah. I know my position's a little different because I do have an engineering day job. But like, that's my day job. That's not my real job. And like, I really am so desperate to set everything up for myself so that when I come back to the opera on the top of my game. And when we come back, I come back with a resume and a skill set that is sharp and on point to really break into designing.
That's awesome.
Really awesome.
That's awesome. All right, Allison, how about you?
Well, I mean, just going off of a couple of things that Ray mentioned, I would second your, it is magical by the time that the final dress is magical because the first dress is not. And so to see where it starts, our first dress starts and we're all literally running around like, what are we even supposed to be doing right now? And then by the final dress, everything's like running like clockwork and smooth. And I'm like, this is magical. Like, cause where we were a week ago, 2 weeks ago, sometimes
yes,
it's like night and day. It's crazy. I'm like, I don't know. So yes, I definitely agree with that. Yeah. So I guess my last show that I worked on literally right before we shut down in March was with Madeline. I think Madeline and I did Marion's Song with Houston.
The very first week of March, and then it was like done.
Yep. first week of March, we did Marianne's Song. It was amazing. It was beautiful. And then like, what, the next week, maybe 2 weeks later, we went in, Houston went into total quarantine shutdown, lockdown mode.
Yeah, so I think it was literally the next week, because I think like 2 weeks after that, I was supposed to be back in and they were like, nope, that's it.
Right. Mm. Yeah, it was nuts. It was nuts. I miss it, because I don't know, all the connections you make and the people you see, and I don't know, it is sad. And like, of course, you know, as we've all said, it is hard, and you barely sleep sometimes, and you know, it is hard work, but I do miss it and I love it. I've been keeping busy. So I also work for my church, running some technical stuff there. I run the screens in the sanctuary. I make the screen presentation, you know, with whatever needs to be shown on the screen.
That's awesome.
Thanks. Yeah, I really like it. So I'm always up in my little tech booth away from everybody. So that's cool.
Some of those are specialized programs too, right?
I'm sorry.
When you're doing, aren't some of those specialized programs that go like with the music and such like that?
It can be, yes. So yeah, it's really cool. And I do enjoy that. And because of everything, we went totally online for months, you know, with church, you know, so we were having to learn how to, you know, pre-record things, put it all together and present it every week, you know, as like an online, you know, service. So that was, it took some adjustment, but it went really well. I think I'm really proud of how, you know, my church has grown and, you know, come together to overcome. And we only just started back in person with social distancing, like limited capacity, really spread out. We're fortunate that the sanctuary is really large. So I know that not everyone has that option, but ours is quite a large sanctuary, not massive, not mega church, but it's just, it's, you know, has a good capacity, so we're able to wear masks, spread out. So that's been interesting to see that grow. And actually literally just this morning before we got on, you know, for the podcast, we just did a test run of our new live stream equipment, because we'd been doing pre-recorded online services. And so now we're going to actual live stream. We have a really cool camera. I'm really happy with how our test run went this morning. So that's
exciting. Great.
So it's kind of made them come up and, you know, get into the, you know, more technical side of things. They were doing okay before with the screens, but now it's, you know, coming along with that. So that's been keeping me really busy with church. And then I've also picked up, you know, a part-time job with Massage Heights. It's a salon retreat, you know, mostly that focuses on massage and facials. So once I get my license, I'll be able to start doing facials there. Right now I'm, you know, lifestyle consultant at the front desk. So I've just been working, you know, a lot, which I'm really grateful to be able to work, you know, at all, because I know a lot of people, you know, are struggling right now. So
yeah, I'm gonna start working for Favor, I'm telling you.
Really? Right. Exactly. DoorDash
and Instacart and all those things. Yeah.
Hey, if I didn't have a kid, I would be doing DoorDash and all that.
Right.
What I was gonna say earlier, Allison, I think that's great. Aesthetics, like, because I know that theater makeup's, you know, different because it's so far away, but literally every other type of makeup, film being 4D, you know, and seeing every single pore, like, I think like the basis of good makeup is good skincare. Because if you don't have like a good foundation, a good primer, like everything else just looks, it looks terrible in pictures on screen, you know? So
absolutely, you know, and skincare, you know, has always been an interest of mine, and it ties in with the makeup, as you said. So I'm kind of using this time to, you know, broaden horizons, as, you know, both of you have said, Ray has said, and, you know, really, I think we're all just trying to learn and grow and see what happens. A tiny sort of silver lining. I hate even saying that there's a silver lining, but with the economy kind of tanking, which is not great, but interest rates are really in favor of home buyers.
If you're now a real estate agent, it's great.
I'm actually in the process of building a house, which is really exciting. So.
That's awesome.
That is really awesome, and I'm totally jealous.
My almost fiance, not quite there yet, but almost.
Aww.
My almost fiance and I are building a house. So the interest rate, we're able to do it because the interest rate would be so crazy low that it's like, well, hey, why not do it? Let's just do it. So
congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Congrats on your baby. Oh my goodness. Is that your baby?
I was going to say.
Yes, congratulations. Oh my God.
So side note, Ray, does anyone ever tell you that you look like Broad City, like a mix of the two girls from Broad City?
No.
No?
I can see that.
I can see that.
Really? Yeah.
Although no one has told me I look like anyone in years at this point.
Oh yeah, you're like a combination of like Allie and Elena. Like that's a compliment. So
awesome. Thank you. Oh, I also have a life achievement in 2020.
Oh.
Stacy has a baby. Allison has a home. I got engaged.
Oh, yay!
Yay! That's awesome.
Yes. That's wow. Awesome.
Yeah. You even got Jake to smile and he's grumpy.
I'm like, now I need one for this year. Oh, wait, we got a kitten. Does that count?
Yes, that does count. Yes, they're fur babies.
I mean, that makes three. So it's not super exciting necessarily because it's not like first cat, but.
Okay. So, and I know it's not super exciting to say we started a podcast, but we started a podcast that.
Where is that?
On some notes, we've gotten a lot of cool things that have happened with the podcast. We talked about mental health being an issue, and you know, maintaining our mental health in this industry is very, very huge. So we've been able to point people in the right direction, and we've seen them go there. So sometimes when you're behind the scenes of a podcast and social media, you see that you affected somebody, and we saw some of our listeners that went to the Loving Hands for Stagehands Facebook group for mental support. So we do have some small achievements. We just have to look for them. And we are now over 750 downloads and we're not even a month in.
Yes.
We're doing something pretty good. It's not as self-fulfilling because we're doing this for other people, right?
But that's
we
a good
have
point.
To look at we have to look at the fact that it's working and that we are affecting other people and allow that to come back and help us. We have to see it though. We have to feel it. It's there.
That kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about like when I'm working on stage and it could be, you know, inspiring someone else in the audience, another like young kid or, you know.
Absolutely.
That was
absolutely
one of my favorite things at the opera is when we do student nights.
Yeah.
Because it's cute how they cheer like they're at a rock concert and it makes you feel really good. Like, yeah, you're right. I am a rock star. Yeah. and they cheer at everything. And it's wonderful. And it's just, I love inspiring that next generation.
That high school night energy, it's amazing. I've never heard, you know, the cheers and the applause for La Boheme, you know, like it's not the same as on high school.
Live every day like it is a high school performance night at HG. That's the energy we need.
It's so great. I love being backstage for those because you're like, okay, you've usually been doing it for like a month now. You know, you've been in tech and dress rehearsal. Like it's kind of in some ways lost its magic because you're like, okay, I know what happens, whatever. And then, yeah, you'll be at high school night and there's like this major reaction to something and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Sometimes it makes you wonder if something that wasn't supposed to happen just happened. Well, there's especially when you're backstage, you're like, wait, what? Is everything okay? Okay, good.
A random off topic. This is like something that I've experienced a number of times, and I think it's so important, but backstage tours.
Yes.
Like backstage tours are so important. Like when I was in high school theater, my theater class went to New York, and I think it was New York, and I got to do a backstage tour of the Apollo Theater. I got to on stage. I got to rub the lucky stone.
That's awesome.
It was mind blowing. I was like, yes, this is where I am. This is what I'm going to do. And like, what the show that really made my family stop asking me like, when are you going to get a real job, and start being like, oh my God, this is a real job. Wow. This is amazing. Congratulations. Was Rodger and Hammerstein's Cinderella when it came to Houston. Because they had bought tickets, and I hadn't told them that I was working that show, and they asked me if I wanted a ticket to go. And so at intermission, I asked the stage manager if I could give someone a party of six a backstage tour, and they said yes. So I texted my family to meet me at the stage door after the show, but I didn't tell them why. And so I opened up the stage door. My family's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, come on back. They're like, I'm sorry, what? Come on, let's go. And when I got to on stage, the curtains were up, the sets were all around. And my niece, who was very young at the time, walked on stage. Like, she got right on, looked out at the seats, and then just started twirling her way across the stage.
Aww. That's so cute.
And she's been in dance ever since. She loves to perform.
That is like, so awesome.
It's so important.
I found out how to scratch that itch, you know?
Yes.
That is cool. So awesome. I'm hoping is that at some point, when things reopen, but we're still under COVID watch and, you know, can't have so much things going, I'm hoping that we could take our Feed the Crew and have two people go around backstage in certain places and be able to put that out as part of the podcast, you know, video podcast at that point, to be able to talk to some people backstage. Hey, what's it like coming back, et cetera? How excited are you about this show? And talk a little about their jobs and still be able to give that to people, even though, because it's going to take a little time before they say, okay, we can have a bunch of guests backstage. It's going to take some time.
Do you guys always get asked, sorry, this is a little bit off topic, but like just Ray talking about it reminded me. I get asked so many times, like, do you just work backstage because you want to be an actor and you're like in between shows? And I'm like, no, I have no desire to be on stage. I used to dance and I used to do dance competitions, and I would freak out beforehand. I have no desire to be an actor, but I get asked all the time. Is that just me?
Oh, that happens to me all the time. Whenever people will say, oh, you work for Houston Grand Opera, do you sing? I'm like, believe me, you do not want that in your life. I'm like, I make them look good. I make their hair look pretty, their makeup look on point. You do not want me singing.
I don't really get that. People are like, oh, you work at the opera? Amazing. Isn't it so glamorous? I'm like, thank you. Lock me in a basement.
I mean, the basement's pretty cool.
They lock you in this closet.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm hanging out with people who are in their underwear because they don't care if they're in costume, but...
Lock me in a basement with a bunch of half-dressed men, and I spend the evening listening to fart jokes that are actually kind of funny.
Theater and fashion, you get really used to naked people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What I was going to say, how you said like inspiring people and all that. I remember I used to wish that there was somebody out there that would have kind of took me under their wing. I definitely did it. I had to learn the hard way. You know, I had to you know, I had a freelance job where I once didn't get paid in the very beginning because I didn't know how this stuff worked. Like I, you know, worked for sometimes people, I don't want to say men, but they were men that were inappropriate, or, you know what I mean? Like I definitely had to go through things the hard way. So I always wanted to find someone that was interested in, you know, being introduced to the whole industry. And at one point I did find somebody that was interested, and she kind of helped me by being my assistant, but at the same time, she learned a lot, and she ended up going to the Muff Academy. Not the Muff, that's Makeup Forever, Mud Academy. The Mud Academy in New York, they have one in Burbank, California too, but she went to the New York one, and you know, she's an artist, she lives there. But that, I thought that was really great. It was really hard to find somebody that was interested in learning behind the scenes. I don't know if it's because people just wanted to jump in, or if I had a hard time finding people. I think that's a great thing to kind of take somebody under your wing and teach them things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. That's something I'm hoping, like, this podcast eventually, because mm-hmm. we have so many people on who are like, oh yeah, mentorship, it's so important to me and stuff. And you're right. We're all at the beginning, a lot of us are looking for somebody to help us get into that, because this industry is really a lot about getting in the door and who you know and learning on the fly a little bit. But what I'm hoping eventually it would be really cool is if, like, somebody was listening to the podcast and be like, hey, this person that I heard you interviewing, I really want to learn from them. I really want to see if they'll be my mentor, and hoping that it'll help make that connection.
Exactly. I was going to say the same thing, is that we want to help people, you know, as we progress in the next few years, help people connect with each other, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe they'll say, hey, you had some hair and makeup ladies on and I want to connect, but I'm in Seattle. Okay. You're in Seattle. That's okay. But let's talk to the hair and makeup ladies that we have and that we know, and maybe we know somebody in Seattle at that point, but you know, it's the, how do you find that mentor? So let's ask that question of you guys. Do you have a mentor? How did you find your mentor? Now, Stacy, you know, like you said, you didn't really have somebody. So hopefully at some point we can have you be the mentor.
Yeah, I will say I did have one person eventually that did help me. And she was a hairstylist, and I actually apprenticed under her for 2 years. For hair before I went to school an extra year for hair, but she started just like giving me ideas, and sometimes that's, you know, she didn't know really much about the freelancing industry, but even if we're not in the same city, giving somebody ideas on how to get to, you know, where you want to go and what to do and what not to do really gives you like a huge, huge advantage. I'm talking about like 5 years of me making like the worst mistakes possible. And it's really about who you know. So like, talk to people. Like if you go on a trip to New York, you know, I would go in a bar and just ask people like, what do you do for a living? Oh, you do that? Oh, and then mm-hmm. just start like making connections. Like I met somebody, like I said, I did that fashion show in Philadelphia for the fashion school. They have the fashion show for the graduates or whatever. And I did the hair, I did the makeup. I met a guy there, and later on I needed help in DC on a set. I needed to hire some people. Sometimes it's hard to find a crew that wants to give up 6 months of their life. You know, and he was one of the makeup artists that I met once. And he came and was a part of this film crew. And, you know, just like I met somebody once, and it helped create this, you know, this connection. Talk to people, everyone. It's about who you know, really, I think.
I mean, Stacy, you and I had only met for 2 days, and then a week later you gave me a phone call and said, hey, do you want 2 months worth of work?
Oh yeah, I met you on that there was a woman that wanted you to be union, and yeah, we were on a photo shoot that we did pro bono, by the way. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I took 2 days off of the job that I was working at the time to do this perfume commercial, and then I met you, and on that, and like a week later, you called me, and you were like, hey, by the way.
And it's, I want to say this real quick, because I think it's great advice for people that are starting out. A lot of times people will try to use you and they're going to want to say things like, hey, this can get you exposure. You can meet people this way. Make sure that it's something that benefits you.
Make we're sure all shaking that our heads. Something- no,
yeah.
No,
make sure that's not how that works.
Pay the bills.
That something that's in your path. Like, for instance, I did New York Fashion Week. I did it for free. Why did I do it for free? Because I was interested in learning a little bit more about fashion. I was interested about making connections. I was also helping out a friend that was a designer. Like, I felt good about doing that for free because I felt like I got something out of it.
That's a resume builder and references. And you're absolutely right. Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No worries. Whereas, I remember a TV show came through. I'm not going to mention the TV show, but they wanted to offer trash money. I'm just going to say trash, like nothing. And it's sad because I felt like some people would take the job just because it looks good on their resume. And yeah, sure, if you want to do that, if that feels good for you. But if you're also at a position where you're already getting work or whatever, don't let people take advantage of you. Either you want to do it or you don't. Don't let people push you into something and think it's a good thing, because really they can just be taking advantage of you. And, you know, yeah. That's all I wanted to say.
I remember seeing a job posting one time that really made me so mad. It was for an independent film and they were looking for the entire crew. And the job posting was like, oh, you know, videographer, $35 an hour, like lighting, $35 an hour, all of these. It was all like decent pay. I mean, it's low pay because it was an independent film. But then all the way at the bottom, it said wig or hair, makeup and wardrobe volunteer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exposure.
Yeah. And how is that going to help anyone? It's an indie film. Like, yeah, it'd be great if it gets picked up. But if that's somebody else's passion project, are you really meeting someone that's going to, like, I don't know.
It made me so mad. I was like, wow, even within the industry, undervalued work.
Wow. That's surprising. Yeah. Like, I should not be surprised, but wow.
But here's the thing, to be like a gaffer, to join the union, gaffers pay like $30 to get in and they're good. Like,
yeah.
Whereas hair and makeup, they're like, all right, $5,000, a year full of work, this many hours. Like, what? Maybe I should be a gaffer instead.
Wow, right? Well, Allison, how about you? Did you have any mentors in this business?
Yes, I actually did. I, really had some amazing professors that helped me because I, you know, pursued my degree in theater. I had a couple of professors that really, you know, took me under their wing and, just really helped me, you know, kind of get my start and navigate, you know, the industry and everything. So I'm really grateful to have had them, and I'm still in touch with them. And it was funny, she was actually my scenic design professor, but she became like my life mentor, basically. Her husband was the technical director at Houston Grand Opera at the time, which is how I got connected. Not immediately, it actually took some time. He threw my name out there like, oh, you know, she's interested. And gosh, I want to say it was like 3 years later that I, eventually, found my way onto the wig crew, the hair and makeup wig crew. And, you know, kind of got started from there. So like, even though, you know, I knew somebody, you know, it can still take time and stuff. So I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, so pretty much I would say that they would be my, you know, a couple of my professors really, you know, helped me along the way. And then now people that I've met, you know, through Houston Grand Opera, I say I would have several mentors who's done it, you know, for a long time, our wig crew supervisor, you know, she's been, you know, a hairstylist her entire life, like, and she's amazing, you know, shout out to Miss Mary, I'm sure, you know, Ray knows. And, you know, Dottie, my, our, the wig department head, you know, she's really taught me a lot as well. You know, she taught me ventilating, making wigs, and really, I mean, just pretty much everyone that I've, you know, kind of come in contact with at HGO, I've learned something from and made a lot of really awesome connections and friends. And I don't know, it's been a good experience.
That's great.
That's cool that you know how to make wigs too. I've heard that's a really good skill to have and a really in demand skill in some ways because not a ton of people know it. And yeah, I mean, it's something like even I'd be interested in looking into, and I don't usually work in hair and makeup.
It's a pretty niche thing. And I would say you really have to love it. It's, you know, very tedious and stuff, but there's something very satisfying about seeing where it starts from nothing. And then you have a whole like head of hair afterwards, you know? So it's really interesting. And like, I'd say that the wig community like is really small in general. So like whenever you mentioned, you know, oh, like someone's in Seattle who's interested, like, honestly, all I would have to do is ask our, you know, wig department head supervisor. I know she knows the head of the wig department in Seattle. Like, I know
she's a great point.
It's such a small world, you know, because I mean, if you think about it, a lot of theaters don't even have a dedicated wig department. It's sometimes just under the umbrella of costume in general. So like, really, there's only just a handful in each major city. So like, they all know each other.
I mean, look at Saturday Night Live. It's one woman. Just
true.
Just one woman.
Very true. How about you, Ray?
I didn't have one specific mentor. What I did have was teachers and professors who had a career of experience before they came to me. My high school theater professors, all of them, had already had a career of professional theater before they retired from professional theater and gig work and became a high school teacher. And they taught me what I needed to know to succeed in the industry.
That's awesome.
And yeah, because you don't always get a great teacher, but that's good that you did have good teachers.
Yes, and it was like that for me for all of my years through high school. Every high school theater teacher I studied under, same thing with my college professors. And even continuing education courses that I would take, I got professors that were that experienced, that skilled, that invested in me.
Ray had asked what our favorite, you know, experiences and shows that we've had.
Oh, good. So that was on my list.
That's what we were talking about while you guys were away.
All right. So we're interrupting. Continue. Please continue.
So I think super quick recap. I think Ray mentioned that she, you know, the gross, gory thing that grosses me out. So
yeah.
Briefly, what did you say, Ray, that your favorite?
For me, it's mostly my gore projects. Mostly it was this one project. The project never made it out of production. Like, it died in post. So it never got aired. But it was a director that I had already worked with before on for gore. And so they basically gave me free rein for a serial killer horror show.
No one should ever give Ray free rein. That's terrifying.
I can actually see that as a huge bonus, man. I would Yeah, I'm looking forward to working with her at some point. That's like
by the end of production, my name on set was Blood Goddess. I put blood on everything. Mm-hmm. And like it looked terrifying on everything. And like there was a fight scene, and they gave me fake teeth for a fight scene. So someone got their tooth knocked out, and like,
oh my gosh,
all of the bruises and the blood and the cuts and everything. And like, he thought it was great. He posted a photo of it on Instagram, and suddenly his friends are like, tell us where we're coming.
Oh, that's awesome.
Woo!
Good promo.
Yeah. And like, you know, and like, that was really fun. I got to slash a girl's neck and like, throw blood down her whole front. That was really fun.
On resume, slash girl's neck.
Okay. Now, I have blood continuity on my resume, so
there you go.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite things to do is the 2D gore effects.
And that's awesome.
She said that some of her favorite things have been like passion projects.
Because we didn't have to like dumb it down for like commercialized stuff. Fashion photographers, definitely like their passion projects, just they were fun. They, you know, we didn't have any limits. One of my favorite things, again, it didn't get aired. We were just doing a I have mom brain, by the way, so it's a thing. We were doing a pilot with one of the photographers that I worked with regularly. It was like one of the producers from Jersey Shore, and we were doing like more alternative models. Mosh was one of the people that were in it. She's like done stuff with Lime Crime. And then Porcelain, he was from RuPaul's Drag Race. And we had all these people that had like just these fun, you know, like underground. I mean, there were some, one of the girls was a porn star. I mean, these people just really didn't have any limits to, you know, the crazy drag, hair, makeup, burlesque type people. And I mentioned that not to turn it sad, but that photographer passed away this year due to COVID. And she was one of my favorite photographers to work with. But, you know, that's definitely my favorite projects, like the passion projects that we do on the side, just out of straight passion, you know.
So I understand that Stacey has to leave us soon. I want to ask you one last question, if we can fit it in. Do you have anything you want us to shout out? Social media, where people can find you, anything like that?
Your own business?
So I guess Instagram is always the best place to find me. I think sometimes it's hard to find us artists. It's funny, not all of us are the best at promoting ourselves. And honestly, a lot of us like to be behind the scenes. That's why we're behind the scenes.
that's true. But if somebody listening wants to find you, you can always tell them to find you through the show. That's fine as well. We point them in our direction.
On Instagram, my most commercialized one that I put up is called Fables Beauty, Fables Beauty, no space or anything like that. So if anyone has any questions or advice, I would love to help out where I can.
I didn't know you were still doing Fables. I thought you had finished that.
Oh yeah, I definitely did put that on the back burner, that's for sure. Yeah, anyone that doesn't know, I like was researching for years and years, at least 5 years, about business and how to make makeup and stuff like that. So I was making these what look like storybook boxes, the old school like Hansel and Gretel type boxes, and you would open the first page and it would have like all like a how-to, and inside of the storybooks was all this makeup. That was a lot of money. That was a lot of money that I was putting into that. And yeah, that's on the back burner right now. It was doing well though for a while.
Well, maybe we can give you a boost, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta boost these artists sometimes. We get into ruts.
That's true. That's true. You end up in your own circle and not exceeding your own circle because you're not hitting that one last piece. Well, and we talked about mentorship. That's something I wanted to get back to real quick, because that's where we got interrupted with the studio side. But somebody mentioned that you don't want to give yourself away, which is true. When you're doing a job that's worthy of pay, make sure you're getting paid. If you want to work for free to learn things, you can always go into community theater. You can go help out a high school, and you're getting experience that way if that's what you need. Mm-hmm. You don't have to give it away. But then finding people, I think sometimes we just don't realize that it's not necessarily bugging somebody to ask for help. A lot of us want to help the next generation come up. And so if you're asking somebody for help, who's like, I don't have time for that, it just means you asked the wrong person.
Yeah.
So you need to move on and ask somebody else. Don't be discouraged by your first no or your first two no's, because honestly, it's just, there's a short list of no's. So if you're getting no's, you're on the wrong list. There's a lot of people, and I stress a lot of people, that want to help the next generation come up.
And sometimes it's not the right question. Like sometimes I'd ask people, can I shadow you? Like at the Hippodrome Theater, or, you know, I have friends that will do, like people like Celine Dion, or, you know, if she comes into town or at those theaters. And I always ask, can I be there? Can I shadow you? Can I just please? And everyone's like, no, I can't have somebody extra there. You're going to be in the way. That's against protocol, you know?
Right.
But the right questions that they presented to me is, you know, who do I know, or who do they know that could give me ties to whatever, or, you know, ask, you know, keep on asking different questions, because it might not be the right question.
That's true. And sometimes it could be as simple as, can I buy you a cup of coffee, and just have that conversation, right? Start to pick their brain about how they got where they got to. So sometimes it's smaller things. And like you said, that's so true. If you ask the wrong question, you're going to get the no answer, you know?
Yeah. Cause a lot of times people don't mean any harm, but really there's not extra people aren't really allowed on set, especially backstage theater. I mean, we're shoved into closets.
Right. You could honestly get away more with going on to the corporate side. So asking someone like myself as a technical director, if I've got people that are doing makeup backstage for corporate gigs, they're more likely to say it's okay to shadow a person. I don't have that huge security issue of having Celine Dion backstage.
Yeah.
So getting an extra person in to shadow a makeup and hair person is easy on the corporate side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry, I didn't want to steal Allison, that question from Allison though, on what your favorite work was, but I do have to head out. So
we're going to say goodbye to you. We'll finish up with Allison, and thank you for being with us, Stacey.
Yeah, it was so nice meeting you guys, Allison, Ray.
It was nice to meet you. Congratulations again on your baby.
Thank you so much. Congrats on your house being built, and congrats, Ray, on your engagement.
Thank you. It was lovely meeting you, Stacey.
You too. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Oh, I want to find you guys. Are you guys on Instagram?
I think.
Oh, you can. No, no, no. She can go back to the show when it airs, and she can pick up the show notes in the description.
But yes,
or I can send them to her later.
We'll connect you, Stacey. Don't worry about it.
We will definitely get you connected. Nice meeting you.
Bye, Stace.
Bye, guys. Thank you for having me.
We're glad that you could be here.
Yes, I'm so glad. This has been so fun. Like, I didn't really know what to expect, honestly, but I'm so glad to see everybody.
Really fun.
I joked with Madeline earlier because I didn't feel like getting up today and I didn't want to do my hair and makeup. And I said, maybe I should just bring all my crap up and they can tell me how to do my hair and makeup today. Or we can bring the studio down to my bathroom.
So one of the things that it's really been weighing on me, not having wigs or makeup to do. And it's really been weighing on me that I'm not getting to wear my makeup because, you know, the mask messes it all up. But like doing this on Zoom, being able to like do my makeup and everything, and man, it feels nice.
I know, I pulled out my collection of lipstick this morning and I was like, I haven't been able to wear you in like ever.
Yeah, I haven't worn this actual lipstick in a year, at least.
I finally got to, so I love black lipstick. Like black lipstick is my everyday lipstick. That's what I wear.
And you rock it. It looks amazing.
I bet she does rock it.
Okay. Bro, you and I need to go out because I wear dark purple.
Okay, look, thing about that black lipstick, once I bought it, I spent 6 months learning, like figuring out how to design, how to wear it like a classic red lip. And that is why it looks the way it does, is because I designed it to look like classic Hollywood Marilyn Monroe glamour when she wears that red lip and is that bombshell.
That's awesome. All right. So I missed out on Allison, right? On you answering that question about favorite moments.
Yes. So now I have to think about it, because whenever we were on our own, I actually didn't answer it then either, because I was like texting Madeline, like, can you guys get back into the Zoom? So, anyway, okay. So I guess some of my favorite shows that I've worked on, I'd say were probably some of the most difficult ones end up being the most rewarding, which, I mean, if I went back in time and told myself that, you know, when I'm not sleeping and stuff, I'd be like, are you kidding me? Like, you're crazy. But when you get through it and you see the end result, you're like, wow, that really came together. It really turned out amazing. And just like certain things, you know, that I will always remember, you know, my first rep with HGO. It was that fall. I'm like, Ray probably knows where I'm going with this. But my first rep with HGO was kind of like trial by fire. It was Tosca, which was very straightforward. It was beautiful, wonderful. Like that one was okay. But paired with it was Eugene Onegin.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it was that one. Ooh.
So I was with the women's chorus on that one. And I believe, Ray, you were with the men's chorus.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty much exclusively with the men's. Yeah.
I kind of go between both, but I was with the women's chorus with this one. And we had, oh goodness, it was a couple of massive quick changes. It was literally 32 women. And I want to say just as many men, maybe somewhere between 20 and 30 men.
I have the number 20 in my head. It was somewhere between 20 and 30 men had to quick change all at the same time. Yeah. Oh,
but I will never forget the 32 women that had to, because we had a couple of dancers as well. So that we had.
And that change, that quick change was wardrobe and hair.
It was
at the same time.
Complete period costume, you know, full costume change, makeup change, hair change, wigs. So because it shifted, I want to say it shifts time periods. Which this was several years ago now, so I might not be remembering that perfectly correctly, but I mean, we're talking like the full petticoat, the full gown, giant, you know, hoop petticoats, you know, full costume. And then they also had to change their wig as well as their makeup look. Like, and it was ridiculous. Wow. It was, you know, 32 women doing this at the same time. And the men were on the other side doing it as well. And it was, I want to say it was under 4 minutes. It was like really fast for that.
Wow. Three people. Something. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really ridiculously fast. So like that, even though it was ridiculous to get through, like the fact that we did it, and it was a beautiful show. The costumes were gorgeous, and the hair, the wigs, everything was beautiful. So that was really cool.
Yeah.
We had some similar crazy moments, I think, later in that same season in Rusalka. Really fast makeup change on some supers.
We had to get the principal artist down to help us, remember?
So it was like nuts, basically, like full makeup, costume, wig change, like super fast. And it was back and forth a lot because it was the same group of supers that did multiple parts. And so we had to change their wig and makeup and costume like 7 times throughout the whole thing, back and forth, back and forth. It was crazy. So that was really fun. And then the world premiere of The Phoenix. We had some really insane costumes. Madeline, were you on that one?
I was on that for one night because there were so many people who kept like getting injured.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yes. It was interesting.
That was my first HGO show.
Oh my gosh. I'm so sorry.
I'm so glad you're with us.
It all turned out really great. Like the costumes and the whole thing ended up being really cool. But again, full chorus changing. That one did have time period jumps, like massive time period jumps. So full costume, full, you know, makeup and wig. Full chorus, and one of them was literally 1 minute and 30 seconds for the full chorus to change all of these
things. What?
1 minute and 30 seconds, and it was like 24
wow.
or something.
I remember that.
So well, it was like 24 women and then 24 men, and the men and the women did it all at once, but they came at separate times. Like it was all of the women came, like went in like a tornado, left, and then immediately all of the men come in like a tornado, were ripping their hair off as they're walking by and putting it on as they go.
It was nuts. Like,
yeah, that show was so crazy.
So yeah, even though it's like the hardest things, like the sense of accomplishment and achievement that like, wow, somehow the magic of theater, we like made it happen. Like those are kind of my favorite moments, really.
Yeah.
That's if I had thought about it, I would have written down the specifics ahead of time because it was very impressive. It was like this number of people in like 1 minute and 33 seconds and stuff. And those extra 3 seconds counted, you know?
Oh yeah, I bet.
Anyway, yeah.
And like the seconds count also because like different wigs go on differently, you know?
Oh,
like,
sure.
It's easier to put one style of wig on in 1 minute 30 than it is another style.
Well, and different people have different like shaped heads. Like you don't even realize it until you start mm-hmm. taking measurements of people's, you know, wig measurements and stuff. You have to have the hair prep, like how long is their hair, how thick is it, how is their hair prepped under. And so to, you know, principal artists, you know, usually they have, you know, custom wigs that are made to their hairline or altered to fit them very specifically. That's really not always the case with the chorus. The chorus is just as close as you can get. And from a distance, of course, it looks good. It even looks good close up, but you can't custom ventilate a hairline for every single chorus person whenever sometimes you can literally have 60 to 80 people in an opera chorus. Like it's huge, you know, so you can't have a custom ventilated, you know, front for every single person. So like sometimes they don't always fit precisely exactly the way that you want to. So like if you have time, you can like pin it and adjust it and to fit just right. But if you're doing it in 1 minute and 30 seconds and you have, you know, you have 8 people to do and the next person next to you has 8 people to do in that time, you know, like you don't have the time to like pin it and adjust it like so perfectly. So it's it can be nerve-wracking to make sure everything fits correctly, looks good, and they go, you know. So anyway.
Wow, I just can't even imagine. Like I can imagine because I've been around it, but I just can't imagine. Wow.
Like, and one of the things that was really important on that show that Allison can attest to is the way you put the pins in.
Oh, yes.
Because, there are certain ways to put the pins in where, like, you take out the two in the back, and the way you've secured it in the front, you just go, and it comes right off. But if you put the pins in at even slightly the wrong angle, it won't do that. And then you have to take all the pins out individually, and that takes up a lot of time.
And different people have different ways of pinning, but for those fast, quick changes that are just so insane and so many people, and you have a team, you know, a whole wig crew, like everyone, it's like, okay, you have to do it this certain way. So we know where to pull the pin out so it'll come off right away. And you're not like struggling and fighting and messing the wig up, you know, trying to like pull out the pins bad, you know. So there's just so much that goes into like choreographing how it works behind the scenes. And somehow we make it happen. And it's pretty awesome when it comes together.
The movie, The A-Team. With Liam Neeson, he pulls out that cigar, and I love it when a plan comes together.
Yes. So true. Goodness. So clearly, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to ask a next question, but keep going.
Oh, no, that's great. Yeah, I was just shocked that it's already after 3. So if we need to go pretty soon, I totally understand. So feel free to ask whatever you need to.
That's up to you guys. If you have the time, we have the time.
I have time.
So I have some time. I have to be back at church tonight because we have a virtual Houston virtual choir Christmas festival concert. Ooh. And it's available on our YouTube channel, so I can send you the link. It's going to be great.
Yeah, please do that.
Yeah, it's actually really good. I was putting the video together last night and I was like, oh, this is nice. This is good. So those kind of things that have come out of COVID are little silver linings, like the Houston Virtual Choir has done a lot of really cool work. So it's been fun getting to see that.
You've crossed over into the technical world.
Yes. Just all encompassing, I guess.
You can do some graphics, some videos, some streaming.
We've had to just do it all now, you know?
I mean, but like, okay, with how many of the chorus men and women like sing for churches, like, and how many of us technicians have also worked for churches, I feel like there's actually a lot of overlap.
I never thought about that.
Yeah, because I before I got the call that I was being taken on to the 2013-14 season for the Houston Grand Opera, I was working tech for a mega church as a carpenter and a scenic painter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I worked for a bishop out of DC for a short while.
Yeah.
It was a stepping stone for me.
It's weird. It's like technical work in a church is a stepping stone for theater people. It's like we've all done it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And not only just for theater, but for others out in tech. So one of the things that's frowned upon though is to take your church and your, you know, bar band technology and think that you can go right in and jump in and be a lead in these other areas, but it most certainly does get your foot in the door to talk to a lead and start to follow around and see what's going on technically in a different environment other than your church. It's a stepping stone for sure. Just don't think that, you know, your church and your bar band are going to get you to be an A1 at the hobby center. It's not going to happen that way.
Yeah, and that was something that I learned, I don't know, within the last like 4 years. Is like, just because you're not where you want to be right now, so long as where you are right now is going to get you to the next step to get you where you want to be eventually, you're on the right path.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
When you're planning your career, don't plan, I want to be on Broadway, so I'm going to go to New York. Like, that's how you get eaten up and spit out. That's how you get taken advantage of. Like work on, you know, I need to hone my skill. I want to be on Broadway. So right now I need to hone my skill. I need to hone my dancing. I need to hone my acting. I need to hone my singing. So go where there are great teachers for those, where you can make a living to pay for those lessons and get experience. and then go to the next place where you can get enough exposure to get a good enough resume to get an agent. Then work on getting closer and closer and closer to New York. And then once you're at New York, work on getting closer to Off-Broadway, and then work on getting the right connection to get onto a Broadway stage.
Yeah. I hear that. Yeah.
That's something that we've been getting in these interviews, is that there's no one direct path into any of our jobs. Everybody has taken a different path. Some people have gone to college for it. Some people have not. And even like, you know, you might've gone to college, but then it's like another 5 years before you even get started in the industry. Like, everybody's had these not straightforward paths at all.
But it also, it's because there's a certain amount of determination that some of us have to get where we want to get to. So when you're telling a small child that, you know, this is, you might want to think of something else because this is not the kind of thing that makes money. Well, maybe it didn't make money for your cousin, your friend, you know, that person that you knew that backed out and decided to settle down, have a family. These are choices that we make, right? We set ourselves on a path. And even if we move to a certain point in our lives where we're still on the right track, but we're deciding to make a different change, move just a little laterally, and I'm still going to be happy working here doing XYZ and start my family. Yeah. There's no right or wrong path to getting where you want to be. When I first started out, I decided I wanted to work for Clare Brothers, and I wanted to be an A1 for some of these big concerts. And as I started my journey, I changed my mind. You know, that wasn't exactly on my list anymore. And so when I moved aside and became more of a project manager, it didn't break my heart to never have worked for Clare Brothers. You know, it was completely fine to continue on a different path and just take a different fork in that road.
Yeah. And I mean, I started in the fashion industry instead and made my way into theater basically by accident. I mean, that's a lot of people in theater. They're like, oh yeah, I've always loved theater. And like, I've appreciated it even as a kid. Like, I did ballet and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I kind of fell into theater almost accidentally.
I think the ones who push that you can't make money in theater are the ones who got tired of how much they had to sacrifice for how little they were making before they got to the money. Because yeah. I have friends that quit before that, and they didn't make money. And so that experience for them is true. But every single friend I have gone to school with that did not give up, that made the sacrifices,
that's right,
and took the steps they needed to do, every single one of us have made it. Every single one of us.
Yep.
And you have to find what works best for you in your personal life and your personal journey. Like, yeah. You know, I don't know. There's just so many options out there and so many ways that you can kind of make it your own, that, you know, just because something didn't work for someone else, it might work for you. And what works for you might not work for someone else. You know, it's very personal. And so yeah. I think people
need to be
confident in that, you know.
Yeah. And you definitely have to think about it as a career too. Like, it's not just a job, but it is a career. And so like, just like any other career, you have to think about, you know, what does it mean to you? I mean, if you just want a job, you just want a normal 9-to-5 where you can just walk away from work and you're done. Like, that's great. Do that. But this is not going to be the industry for you if that's what you want out of your career and your job.
Yeah.
I think that that's really kind of what happens to those who, as you said, Ray, give up. It's not as much of a giving up as it doesn't mean enough to me to continue on this journey.
Path, yeah.
And that's something that you're realizing for yourself. It doesn't mean enough to you to continue pushing forward through these hard times of getting past this particular level. So really that's what it comes down to, is how bad do you want it? Or do you want something else better? Do you want, or not better, but something else different, you know? And I think that's really what that comes down to.
Yeah, and that's where the saying that every single one of us has been told comes from. If you can do anything else, do that.
Yeah, for sure.
I was never told that, but I can understand where that's coming from. I really, well, so as an example, I worked on my final project in college was a concert that we had to put on for our class before graduation. And part of it was to be able to sell tickets. So of course you sell the tickets to your family, right? And it didn't even occur to me. I sold the tickets to my family, and whether or not they showed up to this concert was of no consequence to me. I could care less, right? I sold my tickets, I did my job, but I don't care if they show up. So as it turns out, my mother did show up. I did not know that she was there. I didn't know any of my family was there. And she was not quite a believer in my education until that moment. And she told me about it. She said, you know, that she went to this concert and she saw these people up on stage that were making everything happen. And it was really cool to watch how this all was going on, and they all knew what they were doing. And it was so confident and well executed. And then she goes, and then I realized you were one of them. I'm like, thanks, Mom. Yep.
Yeah, I've my parents try to be supportive, and they've been better. Actually, since I started working at HGO, my parents have a hard time with the concept of gig work because they've never done it, which I think is the case for a lot of people. I mean, yeah. I encounter a lot of people, especially in their 20s, who are like, oh yeah, my parents are not really supportive. They're like, when are you going to get a real job? But I found for myself that once I got a title at a place where I was like, okay, I'm going to be getting steady work. Like, it's still gig work in some ways because, you know, I'm not necessarily guaranteed the work. Like, they offer it to me and stuff, and but it's still, it's spread out. It's like I work for a month and then not for another month sort of thing. But I did find that once I got to that point where it was like, okay, I'm getting steady work, that my parents sort of started to come around and be like, oh, you're right. And then now during COVID, because I haven't been able to work. I've been doing some sewing, but that's about it, you know, because you can't do wardrobe digitally. You know, you can't work from home with that. But yeah, so I've had conversations with them, and they're like, do what you have to for right now, but you're right, you shouldn't have to give up your career. Like, you've put all this work into it. It is actually your career. Like, they can appreciate it a bit more now. And I don't think they've ever seen any of the shows that I've done.
For me, the parents were the same way. The whole family was the same way until Roger and Hammerstein, when they had bought tickets to the show that I was working. And they were like, and then I got them backstage and they saw exactly the spaces I was working in and how tiny they were. And I was explaining to them, this location is where I did this change. And that was when it really hit them how much work it is and how much of a real job it is. Because wait. She just went off stage and then came right back on, and she had completely different hair and a completely different dress. And you did that in that time in this 2 square feet
with that 3 feet? My favorite. I love that.
Yeah. And ever since then, it's been like, Ray, what's the next show you're working on? I love it. Awesome. My family's so supportive, and it's something my family like really gets behind and supports, and it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
That's really awesome, and it's definitely great that you have that family support. Like I said, I've found a lot of people who kind of don't, or they don't until they've at least been getting like some visibly steady work.
How about you, Allison? Anything like that for you?
Yeah, kind of, you know, gonna repeat a little bit of what everyone else has said, more or less, like here and there. You know, my mom especially, you know, kind of tried to encourage me to not, you know, pursue, you know, theater as much, because, you know, we've all heard the starving artist you know, example and stuff. And like, I understand, like, you know, why she would have, you know, thought that and stuff. But once, you know, I started working with HGO, and it's kind of an established company, and, you know, especially whenever I started, you know, as the wig shop assistant, and that was my full-time job, you know, she kind of saw it differently. You know, that was my, you know, actual job, you know, I wasn't, you know, freelancing and stuff. There's still the struggle though of, you know, it's kind of unlike any other job or career though, because like, even though I was full-time with HGO, it's still the late nights, the long hours, weekends, still of course missing, you know, weddings and events and things. So it's still a lifestyle, even if it is full-time with one particular company. So, you know, I've had, you know, like my boyfriend is very supportive, and he understands, you know, kind of other people in our families, you know, hate that I have to miss things because of work and stuff. So like, that's kind of been a struggle. And right now, you know, I'm not, you know, really working in that capacity. As I mentioned, I'm working for my church and for, you know, the Massage Heights. And so, I don't know, it's been an adjustment and stuff just to see where everything's going to go. And, you know, it's exciting to hopefully, you know, get back to live theater whenever things kind of get more under control and stuff. So yeah, I'm excited to do a couple days of video capture for Marian's Song, which Madeline and I worked on live in March. And so I'm going to be doing, I'm going to assist a little bit with the recording days, you know, helping with, you know, doing hair for that and stuff. So that'll be really exciting to kind of get to see in a different way, you know, live versus the recorded. So that'll be really cool to see.
I agree. I think that should be a little adventure for you.
Yeah. Yeah, the switch to filming is definitely interesting. I'm lucky that I've had previous filming experience before I had to step foot onto the filming for HGO when I did a couple days on Finkensport.
Well, I think this has been a fantastic, fantastic talk, ladies. Really, it turned out to be a lot more than I anticipated, and I'm pleasantly surprised.
I really am. So.
I am.
She was so nervous. She's like, I don't know what to ask about.
See, and that's just me getting in my own head, right? Which is also part of the reason why I stopped preparing as much for these as I started to in the very beginning. In the very beginning, it was like, I need to know more about all of this so that I can ask all the right questions. But it's not, you know, that's just, again, me in my head. It doesn't work that way. You guys write the story. I just keep following along, and it works. It's great. This was an absolutely awesome conversation.
It's been really fun. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for including us. And
yeah, I'm glad that I was able to schedule all of you guys together, because yeah, I was like, I really want a group for that.
It's really nice getting to just talk about the industry with other people in the industry, especially other like hair and makeup people. Like, oh man, that's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been great. And I hope that we can catch up with you both, you know, after things open up, or, you know, if they don't even, like, let's catch up again at some point and see what's going on later on down the road.
Yeah.
This is fantastic to meet you both. Now I feel like I know you both very well.
Yes, hopefully we can, you know, catch up again. And who knows if you've had other, you know, people, you know, for your podcast, maybe there can be just like a hangout Zoom with coffee or wine or something, and just like,
we are thinking about that one. That one is actually one of the ones in the background that we're thinking about working on, and just open it all up to everybody and
I mean, not even for like recording. I just mean just to like talk to people.
Just to talk.
Like,
yeah. Come hang out in my kitchen. Yeah.
By the way, what you guys had asked Stacy, if anyone wants to buy me coffee, you can pick my brain.
Yes, totally.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I'm totally the same way. All right. So we also want to be able to give you guys some shout outs, but we're going to have Madeline take down some information behind the scenes and put it in the description of our show so that people can reach out to you if you want them to, and otherwise contact you through the show.
Perfect. Yes, that sounds great to me.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us
on Feed the Crew.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Don't forget to hit subscribe. Check out our website at feedthecrewpodcast.com for more information, as well as links to all of our episodes, bulletins, and social media.
When you're hungry for
inspiration,
information,
friends, and laughter,
join us.
Join us
on Feed the Crew.